Hi, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Just a heads up on our programming plans. The congressional panel investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol holds its next public hearing today. We'll bring you live NPR coverage starting at noon. The hearing will focus on the rioters and mob who stormed the Capitol and the efforts to assemble them. Join us at noon for live NPR coverage here on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. Now we examine landmark Supreme Court decisions this term about religion in public life. The New York Times quoted Supreme Court scholars who say the High Court has become the most pro-religion it's been since at least the 1950s. Roadmap here for our discussion. City of Boston denying a ceremonial City Hall flag-raising request from a Christian group court deemed unconstitutional. The Maine tuition program ruling that the state pays tuition to private schools but not religious schools for rural students court. That amounts to discrimination against religion. And we start with the High Court siding with that former high school football coach fired after leading postgame prayers on the 50-yard line, a case that has really sparked free speech and religion conversations. Join in, 800-642-1234. Annie Laurie Gaylor is co-founder and co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation based in Madison. Annie Laurie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much, Kate.
Good morning. Before we dig into these three cases, just some of your takeaways here. You know, the new court has six Republican appointees, three Democratic ones. And with these landmark rulings this term and the court really more laser focused on what, you know, the country's founders thought constitutional protections meant, is originalism a threat to separation between church and state?
Yes, originalism has always been a threat. And I like to call it the Trump court. He made three appointments to this court, which was already twerping to the far right. And those appointments were based on his promises, for example, to overturn Roe versus Wade, and that the court delivered. And we have, at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, have endorsed some kind of court reform or expansion since the time that Merrick Garland's seat was stolen by Mitch McConnell, when President Obama was not allowed to bring his nominee to a hearing. And then we have since seen the rushed appointment of Amy Coney Barrett in the midst of a national election. These are unprecedented manipulations by Mitch McConnell and the Speaker of the House that have... It's in a sense corrupted our court. So we're in deep trouble. We have minority rule on the Supreme Court with so many of these ultra conservatives appointed by presidents who did not win the popular election.
Looking at the Kennedy versus Bremerton School District, the 6-3 decision, court siding in the former high school football coach who lost his job because of his practice of praying after games. What was your reaction to this ruling?
Well, I would say that people should know that Coach Kennedy, who's a Fox Media darling and trumpeted by Trump, was not a coach with much experience, and he decided he wanted to become a football coach because he had personally promised God to give him the glory after every game, win or lose. And he wasn't really fired. He was put on administrative leave because he had continued to do these disruptive prayers after the district had tried to accommodate him in many ways. But he had for years led these students in prayer, the same time and same place. And when the school district took complaints, they stopped that. And so the narrative that went before the U.S. Supreme Court was, in a sense, very deceitful. And he claimed he only wanted to give private prayer. And so, interestingly, the fact that the majority bought this deceitful narrative will be a little bit helpful in preserving the separation of religion and government regarding football prayers in public schools, because he said he just wanted to do private prayer. And that's what the court, the very fact-dependent decision by the court said. that his free expression rights were being denied. He just wanted to do private prayer. So football coaches should be aware that they can't lead students in prayer based on this decision.
You know, a question that comes up in the case is whether a coach who routinely prayed with students, whether they felt coerced into doing that, whether the students felt pressured to pray. What do you make of that tension in the case?
There's no question that if you are a football player, everything depends on pleasing your coach. So, of course, there's the innate coercion there of knowing your coach wants you to pray. And even Kavanaugh had made that point at the oral arguments, although, of course, he was part of the 6-3 majority against it. And what was unusual in this case is that the dissenters, of course, Justice Sotomayor wrote it, joined by Stephen Breyer, who's our outgoing justice, mm-hmm. and Elena Kagan. They corrected the factual record to the point where they submitted photographs of Coach Kennedy praying with students into their dissent. So we have a huge factual disagreement by the court, and they wanted the record to reflect that for years he had prayed with students. When he said he wanted private prayer, that was really not the history of the case. But it is a very shocking decision in that it clearly signals that the majority, the extremist supermajority on our Supreme Court, are ready to start repealing 75 years of firm Supreme Court precedent against religious indoctrination in our public schools. So while this case is not going to be a total game changer in that it deals with so-called private prayer, it is sort of the beginning of the end of so many of these strong protections for the rights of conscience of a captive audience of school children. And at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, 50% of our caseload from the public deals with violations in the public schools, and we are able to invoke this strong precedent against that kind of indoctrination or ritual inflicted on students.
Annie Laurie Gaylor with us, co-president of the Wisconsin-based Freedom From Religion Foundation, as we look at Supreme Court rulings this term and the question, separation of church and state, where it is now. You can join in 800-642-1234. So, you know, something that's come up in this particular case is the Lemon Test, that it put an end to a 1971 precedent known as the Lemon Test to help determine whether a government practice had a secular purpose or whether it violated the Establishment Clause of the Constitution. What do you make of the Lemon Test now and how it's being talked about?
Yes, it was almost just a casual reference that the supermajority threw away the Lemon Test. They simply said a partial sentence, this court long ago abandoned Lemon and its endorsement offshoot. And the Lemon Test codified the principles of separation between church and state expounded by the Supreme Court. It was very simple. It asked whether a government action has a secular purpose, whether it advances or inhibits religion, or whether the act of the government fosters excessive government entanglement between state and church. So this is what they have thrown away, and they're replacing it with what they call it
history and tradition test.
History and tradition test, and which is very vague. It gives public schools really no guidance. And also, it seems to suggest that if there's a precedent of violating the Lemon Test in the past, of violating the idea of separation of church and state, then that creates history, and you're going to go with it. So very dismaying. But the Lemon Test had been not invoked a great deal in court cases. We knew that it was being gunned for. We knew it was probably not going to last. But how insulting to just be almost a footnote in this decision. And we knew Alton Lemon, who took a case against vouchers in Pennsylvania with the ACLU. Alton Lemon was a great man. I was thrilled that the Lemon Test was named for him.
Hmm. Annie Laurie Gaylor leads the Freedom from Religion Foundation as we look at SCOTUS rulings this term, strengthening the role of religion in public life. Chief Justice John Roberts' court siding with religious groups. Is there a pattern here as to what violates the right to exercise faith? Join in on the Supreme Court decisions at the intersection of free speech and religious rights, 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're exploring the wall between religion and the public sphere and several major decisions of the High Court this term on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, published a commentary last week saying, quote, "The court has adopted an approach that would see the lines between church and state hopelessly blurred, if not eliminated altogether." Join in with your reaction on boundaries between church and state, what these decisions signal to you, 800-642-1234. Annie Laurie Gaylor is co-president of the Freedom from Religion Foundation with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's talk about Carson versus Macon, the court striking down this main program that provided public funding for students to attend private schools but prohibited the use of state money at schools that provided religious instruction. How might this ruling impact school choice in America?
There have been a lot of bad rulings on vouchers. And of course, our state at the state level had some early very bad decisions allowing vouchers to religious schools to be paid for with tax dollars. But what's different with Carson versus Macon? Well, there's two things. In this case, it said that if there's a program giving to secular private entities, schools, tax money for students to attend, that the state must provide the same money for the religious education. Before it was it may. Mm-hmm. So that is a compulsion. The second thing is that it kind of shot down the no aid provision of that state constitution, the no aid to religious schools provision, which many of our state constitutions have. They call it the Blaine Amendment, but it's really based on the religious Declaration of Religious Liberty by Thomas Jefferson that said that no citizen should be compelled to attend, support, or erect a place of worship. So that was a bitter decision. And in it, Justice Sotomayor did point out to the pattern that you have referenced that we are seeing on the current Supreme Court of privileging religion. And in fact, of emphasizing only the free exercise clause at the expense of the establishment clause. And in her dissent, her very strong dissent in this main voucher case, she said that the Supreme Court was essentially saying that it is a violation of the free exercise of religion to say that there is a violation of the establishment clause. That was very blunt and plain spoken. So we're not just seeing a blurring of a line. We are just seeing complete religious privileging by the U.S. Supreme Court.
I wonder how the Free Exercise Clause, as it's seen in this ruling, what does it mean for the future and how the court regards the Free Exercise Clause?
As paramount. And before, they talked about the play in the joint, said that they were a balancing act. And, you know, the Establishment Clause says in the First Amendment, says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And the second part of it was, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. And in the 14th Amendment, those rights apply to state citizens. So they're equally important, but one isn't more important than the other. And as my mother, who was the principal founder of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, always said, there can be no true freedom of religion without freedom from religion and government. Because when you have the government favoring religion, then you will always have preferred religion and you will have religions or irreligious views that are turned into outside views, that those people will not have the same rights as the favored religion.
Let's take a call now. Steve with us from Sun Prairie. Steve, what is on your mind?
Hi, yeah, thanks for taking my call. You know, I follow this organization on Facebook, and I do see a lot of the posts that are out there. And it's a huge difference between expression and the endorsement of a religion. And, for example, I've seen posts out there that if you're a government employee and you were across the church or across to work, that by definition that could be establishment. Really, it's nothing but religious bigotry. There's a huge difference between expression by an employee working for government and the establishment or of that particular religion by government.
Steve, thank you for that. Annie Laurie, what is your response to how Steve sees it?
Well, I don't know what post he's talking about. So, you know, there are all kinds of government employees who may wear a religious symbol. So I'm really not quite sure where he's coming from.
I want to just take a moment here as before we go to the next case with Chief Justice John Roberts saying, you know, when state and local governments opt to subsidize private schools, they must allow families to use that public funding to pay for religious schools. And I just want to, because he is the Chief Justice, you know, he's making a very clear point there to schools all over the country, I would imagine, as to how you subsidize or pay for private schooling.
Well, people need to know that the two schools, the parents going to or wanting to go to two religious schools in Maine chose schools that allow complete discrimination. For example, you can't be an LGBTQ parent or teacher. Totally discriminatory. They don't have to take any student they don't want based on religion or religious morality. And this has to now be paid for with public funds. And if the state of Maine doesn't want to do that, they have to stop paying for students to attend secular education. And Maine is a very unusual situation. It's so rural that many of the places in Maine do not have a public school, and that's why they had this special law to help subsidize private schooling for at the high school level. So obviously they need to provide public education of some type, and so they're crippled. They're being told they have to support these religiously segregated and bigoted schools.
Annie Laurie Gaylor with us, co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join in 800-642-1234 in these recent Supreme Court cases. Looking at the unanimous decision in May, the Supreme Court said Boston must allow a Christian group to fly its flag in front of City Hall. You know, it had put up the flags of so many other organizations. How did you read the court's unanimous decision here?
Well, this is a very fact dependent case, but in on the surface, terribly shocking that the court would say you have to fly a Christian flag on one of your flagpoles at City Hall. But the city of Maine is able to avoid this terrible prospect by simply changing its policy. It had primarily used this third flagpole for events that had to do with government-hosted celebrations, and these included Pride Month, and that's really what it had this religious organization asking to fly its flag. It's really anti-LGBTQ, but many of the other flags have been from foreign countries having to do with dignitaries coming to town. So what they've done is changed their policies so that they no longer have basically a public forum on their flagpole. However, very distressing to see this image of a Christian flag in front of the American flag and the state of Massachusetts flag being something that the Supreme Court would have tolerated.
In our final moments together, are there other ways the High Court recently expanded the place of religion in public life that you see as blurring separation between church and state?
Well, of course, we are in crisis in the state of Wisconsin because of the terrible overturning of Roe versus Wade on June 24th by six justices who had all been raised Roman Catholic. Gorsuch has become an Episcopalian, and these are conservative Catholics. And we are seeing ultimately a religious dogma being forced on us by the Supreme Court, the only organized opposition to religion, to abortion, excuse me, is religious in nature. And we had submitted an amicus brief to that effect, showing the religious ideology, the Christian ideology behind the anti-abortion law in Mississippi and so many other places. And now Wisconsin women are suffering because the four clinics have been shuttered. We are seeing, 12 states now, and probably predicted half our states will no longer have reproductive liberty. And that is a problem that is a theocratic decision by the U.S. Supreme Court.
Annie Laurie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Annie Laurie Gaylor, co-founder and co-president of the Freedom From Religion Foundation based in Madison. News update is next here in the Ideas Network.